One of the most profitable companies in Norway per employee.
I think in the world.
Very profitable 100 people you have already.
The fangs, the business, what's it all about?
Technology people.
Exactly.
They are no longer hiring men in suits.
Exactly.
They are hiring girls in hoodies.
Customer journey. All our operations fully digital on the inside.
That's excellent.
Yes.
She is the CEO of an 18 billion Norwegian kroner success story. Bank Norwegian was founded right before the financial crisis in November 2007. That's 14 years ago now. When it was founded, it was only a few hundred million of equity, and now 18 billion of market cap. 1.75 million customers. Net profit after taxes, 1.9 billion last year. That's a 19% impressive return on equity. Another thing that's quite special about this company is that there are still less than 100 employees. So, in her own words, she's the CEO of a company that has the speed of a fintech and the strength of a bank. Welcome to the studio, Tina Wollbeck.
Thank you very much.
So is it true? Still only 100 employees?
Yes, that's right. Yes.
That's quite impressive.
Yeah, it's, I mean, we are a very well put together team. We do have some people. I mean, we have an agreement with a call center, but they're not working for us, but they take our overflow calls. And then we have some of our developers, they like to be independent, but they work with us for like since we started.
I didn't prepare this question, but so 1.9 billion net profit after taxes divided by 100. So that's 19 million crowns per.
Exactly.
You must be one of the most profitable companies in Norway per employee.
I think in the world.
In the world.
I'm sorry to sound so. But actually, there was one of our shareholders. He made a very interesting paper on this, and he compared us to the fangs on profitability per employee. So yeah, no, it's cool. But the good thing about it is not that we have few people in the sense of cost. It's that it makes us. That's what makes us so agile and so efficient, because we don't have layers. We it's very easy to get things done. There are costs as well, having so few people.
Of course. So back to today, we are recording this on the 25th of March, and stock's trading around 96.5. There was a bid for the company on the 4th of March from the much smaller competitor Nordax Bank, which is owned by Nordic Capital and Sampo, when they also own 22.72% of the Nofi shares. We're not going to talk so much about that, but I'm also obliged to mention the stock exchange release from the 9th of March saying that Arctic Securities Corporate Finance is acting as an advisor to Nofi. So a bit of a leading question, but I guess it's nice to be popular, Tina.
Well, I mean you're right. It's obviously it's nice that there is an interest, and I think of course this whole thing unlocked a lot of transparency about what the bank is about.
Focus. So, yeah. A lot of focus on you. A bit so of a, like yeah. a flashlight.
Yeah. So in that sense, but obviously it's not something that I comment on otherwise, because it's more the board that needs to handle this.
I noticed that one of your shareholders, a guy called Jacques Bergman, sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, but he was quoted in the Norwegian papers saying the bid should be at least 250 to 400 crowns per share.
Yeah, so Jacques Bergman is very interesting. They have three top management, and I met both him and his son several times, even before they started. They started investing in 2017. Yeah, 17, 18. And they go all in. They only have few investments globally. And they are very interesting shareholder to have. Very committed. And they obviously, they see a lot of potential. And they're not sure yet why it hasn't been released.
Is he the guy who compared you to the fangs? Is that?
No. That was actually a Norwegian investor. No, that was a Norwegian shareholder, yes.
Excellent. So you had a well-visited Capital Markets Day last week. Can I ask, was it a coincidence that the Capital Markets Day came very shortly after the bid, or was it part of the bid plan? Or
No, that definitely were planned long before. I mean, just the fact that it takes a long time to prepare a Capital Markets Day. So we announced actually the date in December, I believe, and we had for a long time before that planned that. I mean, the bank has never had a Capital Markets Day. And given the fact that we are always delivering very good results and that we are going a bit sideways, we find that it would be good to get some more understanding about the business. What's it all about? Because our numbers and our performance metrics are quite unique. So how do we do that? So that was kind of the purpose, and also, of course, the concern about the credit quality and the growth. So this was something we discussed early last fall, but it takes time.
What's the feedback been in general on the Capital Markets Day so far?
It's been very good. I mean, obviously, for Capital Markets Day, some people would like some really, really juicy news. On the other hand, this was the first time, and we concentrated on a lot of basics, but we did do some, I mean, the new things were obviously that we, for the first time, have communicated long-term financial targets, which I think the bank is now at a stage where that is, I would say we should do that because there's a lot of analysts following us, and we need to give some, not guiding, but at least some long-term targets. So that was good. So we got a lot of good feedback, and we also, what I found very interesting was we got a lot of new people connecting in on the Capital Markets Day webcast, which I like because we always like to get to know other new.
Yeah, reach out to a bigger audience.
Exactly. Yes.
Hopefully, some new people interested in the stock after listening to this podcast as well.
Yes.
But I received some feedback. I spoke to a long-term shareholder from London. And he said that your 10% growth, more than 20% return on equity target, he had hoped for a higher target on return on equity because you have in the past, you were at 25% return on equity in 2019. You were at just around 20% in 2020. I believe in previous years, maybe some different capital requirements, but there has been sort of 40%+ return on equity. So are you lowballing a little bit here?
No, I very much understand that from long-term shareholders. There are, I mean, in the equation of the return on equity, there's a return that's an R and an E. And looking at the equity side, we have an enormous amount of equity.
Surplus cash.
Exactly. And of course, the return has to be based on that. And while we could, of course, make all other assumptions saying if it was only on regulatory capital, something like that, we could have posted a higher ambition. And if you take the equity we had back in 17, it would be a much higher return on equity. But the point is the equity we have to give our shareholders return on that equity. And in that sense, this is quite strong because even though we are now projecting a healthy growth and we are projecting dividends of surplus capital, we still have a lot of capital because we are so profitable and built that continuously. So in fact, with the equity amount we have, it's a fine ambition. But I understand that when you look historically, when we had much less equity, the return was obviously, it looked better. But I also think from a sustainability point of view of the bank, this might be, it's an ambitious level anyway.
On surplus capital, our analyst, Roy, he calculated a surplus capital of about 16 NOK per share. And that's including 6 per share, which is reserved for 2020 dividends.
Yeah.
Dividends and banks, that's not a podcast, that's an encyclopedia. That's a very big discussion these days with everyone from, Nordea to DNB and down to NOFI. But do you have, what's the latest update? Are you waiting for approval on dividend? Or
it's not as much as an approval when you pay out more than, when you plan to pay out more than 50%, you have to notify the FSA anyway. So that's the formality. And then, of course, because of the COVID, there is a dialogue with every bank on this subject as such. But on the other hand, the Minister of Finance and FSA have also emphasized that it's the board's decision about dividends. So
your board has approved a 6 per share dividend of 2020 to be paid in May 21?
Yeah, they have put that up for the AGM in late April.
Late April, yeah. Okay. So shareholders have something to look forward to. Then also a big part of your Capital Markets Day was expansion. That's obviously part of your 10% growth, which I think the long-term shareholder also thought could have been higher than 10%. But sprechen Sie Deutsch, Dina?
Nine.
Pablo Español?
Habla español, no. No, I would have liked to. In Denmark, we have German in school together with English, but I try to avoid that. But I think it's a great country, and I look very much forward to starting in both Spain and Germany. And about the growth, I mean, I also think we can do a better growth. I'm quite sure there's a lot of levers we have. Also on the Nordic market. On the other hand, I mean, we do our projections, and when we set up a financial long-term target, we build it.
So you started in Norway in 2007, and you went to Sweden, Denmark, and Finland.
13 in Finland, in Sweden, and Denmark and Finland in 15.
Yeah, so it's been a little bit of a while now until you take sort of the next step. But are you really starting this week in or just after the Capital Markets Day in Spain and Germany, or is this more of a sort of a next year or ambition to?
No, I mean we started the on the ground work some months back, and we've come quite a bit, I would say. So we plan to launch in October, I mean, fourth quarter this year.
Are you hiring a lot of people then in Germany and Spain? Or?
No, we do not hire people locally. We have not done that in any country.
You're still 100
yes.
people at Fornebu.
But we already have one Spanish guy, and we are getting a couple of people from Spain coming to Norway working for us. And we also have a few people, and one from Germany already. So we tend to get people to come to us.
Yeah, I should have specified that. So you're 100 people in Norway, but you're operating in four countries already.
Yeah.
out of the very profitable 100 people you have already. So you're keeping that model.
Yes, and today we are 14 nationalities in the office.
That's impressive. And speaking of nationalities, we are of course very proud in the Arctic Podcast to have a minority in our studio. We are, of course, an equal opportunity podcast. So you are head of Bank Norwegian, but I think you may already have told that you are not Norwegian. You said you were in a country that had a mandatory German in school. As far as I know, that's not from here. So what's it like, Tina, to be from Denmark and head of Bank Norwegian?
I've been in Norway for such a long time that I find that's very, very natural. But yeah, I think it's good. I think it gives a good perspective when you live in a country where you're not born and raised, because you kind of get more sensitive about people's differences and cultures. So I feel that's a good combination.
How did you end up? Was it a headhunter, or did you apply for a job, or?
In Bank Norwegian.
In Bank Norwegian, yes.
Well, I was contacted by someone who actually kind of asked me if I knew about, you know, had a good idea. I think that was a leading question, actually.
But you were at Telenor at the time?
Yes.
Telenor is not really famous for financial services. They are famous for phones.
Mobiles. Yeah. No, that was very cool. I started in Telenor back in 2012. And it's true that, I mean, the reason they contacted me at that time was that they had acquired a substantial stake in a bank in Pakistan, and they realized that banking and telco is two very different things, which is true. And then I knew the head of this area, and he called me and said, if I would join them and potentially be the chairperson of the bank in Pakistan. And I thought, like, whoa, that sounds really interesting. I like to do things that I haven't done before. So I joined Telenor, and after a while I became the head of the global vertical that we created around financial services, because it was not only that we invested and we, after a while, acquired the whole bank in Pakistan. We also
did you live in Pakistan at the time? Or?
I commuted. I never lived there. I had actually the responsibilities for so many countries. So we started Greenfield in Myanmar, and we now have the leading mobile money program in Myanmar. Oh. It's the de facto. It's like the mobile pay of Denmark.
Yeah, so the Vipps.
Vipps. I mean, in Pakistan, EasyPaisa, which is the mobile money program is called, actually started, I think, 7-8 years before Vipps. And it's exactly the same as Vipps.
Wow.
But what's cool is that in these markets where we worked, I mean, Bangladesh, India, Myanmar, the economy is cash, but we digitize money through the fact that you prepay your SIM card and then you have that value on your mobile. So that was a tremendous journey.
So I think you said in your Capital Markets Day that I referred to that you were somewhere between a fintech and a bank. So Bank Norwegian today, I mean, everybody knows the credit card, which we're going to touch upon, and then obviously the consumer finance loan that we can also touch upon. But what's the fintech? What's the most fintechy part of Bank Norwegian today?
No, the fintechy part of us is really that we have a fully digital customer journey, which most banks would say they have. But then on the other hand, we're also fully digital on the inside. So all our operations are fully digital, which is a major difference. Then the fintech part, the similarities there is a lot about the growth, the number of customers, the narrow product set, but a lot of customers that you touch, and then the speed of development and innovation. So I think we kind of have a much more lean structure than any bank would have, which then gives us that speed. Because what you see, I mean, I think banks are doing very well, and I think the innovation is very different from 10 years ago for any bank, aspiring to be tech.
They're all hiring technology people.
Exactly.
They are no longer hiring men in suits.
Exactly.
They are hiring girls in hoodies.
Yes. But the thing is that it's a huge turnaround. And it's something about the culture and how you work, how flat the organization is and how you interact and what are your priorities and who's really making decisions and how do you organize your teams. And I think it's extremely difficult to get away from the silo building of huge companies.
And you know a lot about this because you used to work as a country manager for a Swedish bank.
Yes, SEB. No, and SEB is a great bank, I have to say. They've always been very energetic, and I like that. But you can't get away from the fact that they're a very traditional bank. And there are just some things about how you manage the bank, and especially, I mean, the fundamentals of a bank is the balance sheet and the credit and the risk management framework. And we have the same in Bank Norwegian, but we are smaller and we are more focused, so we can keep that a more integrated part of what we do every day. Whereas in a big bank, that is on the side of the bank.
And I want one question that comes up sometimes, maybe from the banks, maybe from shareholders, or it's the ethical parts of lending unsecured. Because, I mean, traditionally, I think SEB would lend out mortgages mainly, and Bank Norwegian is mainly unsecured. It's a quick consumer loan. So do you, I'm sure you've answered this before, in terms of the ethical part of doing this quick loans?
Yeah, I understand that very well, because also when I was approached on this job, I had also that reflection. And of course, that is unfortunate. In Norway, there's been a lot of focus on this part. And we also try to address that on the Capital Markets Day, because this is very different from reality. And we are, I mean, I'm a big supporter of responsible lending and making sure that we make the customers take good decisions and that they understand what they do. And the fact is that having a good access to unsecured lending in a formal way is a very good, it's very important for any society. And I saw that a lot in Asia, where that's not the case. And it actually gives a lot of opportunities in a society. Then on the other hand, I think there was a very big pressure in Norway for a while. And it came probably from the success of Bank Norwegian. So I see that connection. But to us, it's very important that we can get people to understand that this is an important role, that we have to have this access for people for unsecured lending, because you can come in and need at any time. And it would be very reasonable why you want to have a loan. And what we also see is that most people pay back the loan after a short while. So we addressed that on the Capital Markets Day as well. And it's quite unique for Norway. It's not the same focus in other markets.
So it's been a very strange year, of course, with the COVID. And after many years of high growth, your gross lending actually declined 3% in 2020. Net lending, I got these numbers from Roy, down 6%. You still grew 8% outside Norway in Norwegian crowns in 2020. But lending in Norway, which is the most mature market where we've been long, declined by 16%. So can you maybe move that into a context of the loans that you were giving? Was it a lot of flight tickets that was paid for with the Bank Norwegian credit cards? Is that a big part of the reason for the decline, do you think?
Well, first of all, it's important to distinguish between the loans and the credit card. Because obviously you also have credit on the credit card and you can revolve on that. So there are two different purposes. And you're quite right. In Norway, the card, we have 700,000 credit card customers in Norway, and a lot of them are having the card because they like to combine that with their travel and then the reward program of their airline. And of course, that again, they couldn't travel. What we saw is actually that the domestic spending in each market is about the same as before the COVID.
So we
have about, you know, on average, I would say 3.5 billion a month on the credit card in the markets in domestically. And we have about 1.5 billion ordinary in international. And that was cut by two thirds, so like below half a billion. So that's one of the decreases. Overall, 2.5 billion in balance were reduced in 2020 on the credit card. On the loan side, it's a bit different. And I think in a way it's good. I mean, people are in uncertain times, they spend less, they save more. So yes, the demand went down. So even though we actually increased our market share in Norway in 2020.
And you kept the profitability.
Yeah, but there were less demand and we don't want to push that because we think this will come back. And in other markets, we increased our to some extent because we increased distribution and so on.
So the 25% down in Norway, was that the unsecured consumer loans? So the typical?
No, not 25% down. No.
20 something or?
We had 1 point. Yeah, it was 10%.
Okay. And Bjørn Kjos was obviously a founder or co-founder back in 2007, and obviously all the airlines in the world have had a terrible 2020. Are you emotionally involved still with the airliner? I mean, do you look forward to, do you see then Bjørn Kjos is starting up a new long-haul airline now with Bjørn Tore Larsen and Norse Atlantic? Are you preparing to cooperate with them?
Well, I think it's great that they are still out there doing this. I mean, that's fascinating. And I also think the long-haul program of Norwegian that now is not continued, that was a very good concept. So it's definitely good that they're back. If it's compatible with the NAS or Norwegian Air Shuttle to cooperate on a long-haul program, we would love to do that. But our priority is definitely with the Norwegian airline, which is our largest and most strategic partner.
And then I guess we are ending on a bit of a personal note, but you're free to put it into the customer context as well. We are hopefully getting towards the beginning of the end of the pandemic. So Tida, what do you look most forward to when we are, who knows, maybe the summer of 2021 or maybe it's later in the year, but hopefully there's a lot of vaccines being rolled out. So what do you look most forward to post-pandemic, Tida? Is it travel or where?
No, it's maybe not travel as such. I think I really honestly look very much forward to getting all the employees in Bank Norwegian back. We've had remote offices for a lot of people for a year now, and I think that I really miss that. It's so important for the dynamic. So that's one thing I look very much forward to. And then
do
of
you
course
plan a summer party or?
Yeah, exactly. I just the other day said, could we do something outside in April? And my team was like, no, Tina, that might be too early. But anyway, I think that's super important. I really miss that, and I think my colleagues do. On a personal note, of course, getting the whole family together again. I mean, that's quite. I mean, when you think about it, for a year, and it's been so different, and that I really look forward to for the summer holiday to be. in our summer place together with the whole family. That would be great.
Yes, and who knows, maybe a lot of people get the family together and then they will look and maybe they will see that there's some need for some redecoration and maybe they need a quick unsecured loan and maybe the growth rate will pick up and...
Oh, it definitely will. I mean, all our card customers, as I said, they haven't spent so much abroad and they will do that because people are very keen to travel now.
That's excellent. Okay, Tina, we are very grateful that you were here in the Arctic podcast and I wish you a great of success and may the FANG-type profitability continue. thank you, Tina.
Thank you so much.
This podcast has been prepared by Arctic for information purposes only. The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only, and any reliance on the information provided in this podcast is done at your own risk. This podcast should not be considered professional advice. The information provided in this podcast is not intended to constitute investment advice, nor is the information intended as an offer or solicitation for the purchase or sale of any financial instrument. Relevant and specific professional advice should always be obtained before making any investment or credit decision. It is important to note that past performance is not indicative of future results. This podcast does not fulfill the criteria for preparing investment research and must be seen as marketing material. All information submitted during this podcast is obtained from public sources that Arctic believes to be reliable, but which Arctic has not independently verified. Arctic makes no guarantee, representation, or warranty as to its accuracy or completeness. No liability whatsoever is accepted for any direct or indirect, including consequential, loss or expense arising from the use of information from this podcast.